find Pittsburgh. Wait a minute, what is that? Pittsburgh WD? No. Anyway, they have about three or four stations in Pittsburgh, but this is the older one. And we was marching with them signs. Number 9 widows are here. We would like to just have a few minutes of your time, Mr. Corcoran. So, they send somebody down the street and say, come on up. But don't bring your signs. I said, hey, we cannot discard these signs. They cost money. We might need them again. So, we rolled our signs up. I still have them. And we went up. Well, we met with Mr. Corcoran. He was the PR man. He said, well, we met with Mr. Corcoran. Corcoran was the president then of CONSOL. Corcoran was the public relation man for the company. So we went in the conference room and everything, and he gave us a glass of water. So then he said, well, he'll put us up then for the night, and we could meet with Mr. Corcoran the next day. So we met with him, and if looks would have killed, we would have been dead. So he wasn't, too friendly with us. But I did tell him, I said, well, you sure made a quick trip back from Japan. I never knew you could get back that quick, which, of course, he wasn't in Japan. He just want to fib to us, say. And then when I call him on the phone about something, they'd put me from pill to post, put me on hold. Boy, I had patience with Job, I tell you, through all this. So they'd put me on hold. Then later I said, then they'd give me this person, that person. I said, I do not want to speak to you. I have one person in mind that I want to speak to, and that's the president of the company. Now, don't be putting me from one person to the other, because I'm not telling you what I want. Then finally I'd get him, And it took a lot of patience. Lord, if my husband only knew what all of us go through, have gone through this. And I just hope no other widow goes through what we went through. It's bad enough to lose your loved one without the added tortures. And we were tortured. And they know it too. But they didn't like it when we'd strike back. But what were we to do? We had to stand up for what we believed in, right?
Well, widows aren't supposed to strike back.
We're supposed to be naive and dumb and fold my hands and sit and look at the walls and go berserk. But I wasn't going to let that happen to me. And none of our widows were. We've got a good group of women. And the children, they were precious, 235 of them. And some of them had a lot of children. They didn't know which way to turn, all the burdens on them. And waiting, keeping vigil, where they'd find her husbands. Hey, it was real torture.
I hate to put you through a lot of pain, but, I told you that I want to use this material in a radio broadcast about... with some of Hazel Dickens's music, maybe.
Yes.
And I was wondering if it would be too painful for you if you could recall for me how that day was.
Oh, see, my husband worked midnight, and when he came home the last day from work was Sunday morning. Came home about 8 or a little after, and he always bathed at home. He never bathed in the bathhouse. He bathed in a shower downstairs in the basement. So I'd take the newspaper to him, take him a glass of orange juice, a cup of coffee, and a vitamin. And then he'd relax, then he'd bathe,
Do you remember what you talked about that morning?
And I was preparing it, and he came home and he says, come down here, I want to tell you something. I said, well, just since I get everything here for you, Pete, I'll be right down. He said, that mine is going to go. He said, it's so full of gas, and they have a machine covered up. He said, they're more concerned about the machine than they are the men. And, he was far boss, too, and he'd take all them readings, and he's got his initial PK up over all them. It's not ceiling, but it's a top, of the mines everywhere. And when he'd take the readings, then they were bad. you know, too much methane. So I said to him, I said, Pete, don't go to work anymore. I said, I'll help you. I've helped you before on your strikes, and we'll make it. I said, we got the boys raised. We just, we can make it. I'll be economical. We're not by or nothing. Just, you know, we'll make it. And I will work. I'm not too proud to work. I love to work. And so he said he'll sleep on it. That mean he said he'll think about it. So then he came up and he went to post office. He couldn't sleep, you know. And then pretty soon he laid down. He got up that evening and I made his evening meal. Then we came in the living room and they was playing Honey, I Miss You on this television, you know, song. He said, you know, if you're in the other room, I miss you. I said, my goodness, Pete, I think about that every day. If you're in the other room, I miss you too. We're just so close. And I said, when you're outside, I miss you. Because if he'd go down the road to go to post office or go to the grocery store, I'd always run to the den and he would toot his horn and wave down by the road. And I'd look out the window and wave to him. That's how close we were. He's just that good of a guy, I tell you. He's just... It was devoted, you know. And he'd always been kind of passive before, not to worry me, to tell me about the mines. But this time he did. He let me know. But anyway, that evening when they was playing that, well, then we made remarks to each other. Then later, well, we both loved to dance. He was really agile. We loved to dance. We could do all the dances. And so we were dancing around here in the living room, too. And then we played a game of cards, 500 rummy. Then it was getting about 10 o'clock, and he said, would I make his bucket, you know, pack his lunch? And I said, Peter, you gonna go? He said, I have a job to do. He was loyal. So he dressed, and then he came around, he locked the basement door, and he came around and he knocked real gently on the door because he's a gentle man. I couldn't stand a boisterous, real loud man that would be cruel because he was kind, you know, and quiet man. So he said, goodbye, I'm going to work. And he kissed me goodbye, and I said, I love you, Pete. I'll see you in the morning. Be careful. And he went. So then I couldn't sleep very good. And I'm always an early riser. I get up sometimes 10 till 6 in the morning. I'm never in bed after 7. No time. And so I got up early that morning and I turned on the Today Show. And I was making this afghan here for Christmas. I wanted to get it done. And it told about the tragedy on the television. And I was alone sitting on this davenant. Right here, the same davenant. And I don't know, I just guess I was in shock, but I ran to the phone. I called my son. I called Pete's brother, lives next door over here. And then I just took out street screaming. It was terrible, just screaming. And then I don't know how I got back home. I couldn't tell you. But that time, my son that was in service was located in Oklahoma. He was on his way to work. He was a personnel specialist in the Air Force. He heard it on the news in his car. He said, oh, I know Daddy's gone. He's in that. So then, that time then my son came, my family came, and the preacher came, I guess. Then I guess the nurse must have came. Because by that time, it seemed like I was just like a jellyfish, you know. Just no muscles, no nothing to hold me up. So I didn't get to go up to the mines for a few days because I couldn't walk. Couldn't walk at all. So then whenever everybody prayed and prayed and prayed, and they fed me like Jell-O and things like that so I wouldn't choke. See, it's in my throat. It's just all them nerves. In my voice box and in everything here. it closed on me. I couldn't hardly get nothing down me. And so then, about fifth day or sixth, the preacher came, and my sister and my brother from McLean, Virginia, my sons, they took me up there. And they'd been keeping vigil because they kept it open. They said 10 days after the tragedy. I don't know if they did or not, but they said they did. And I went up to ask this one widow if she would go to the hospital because she was expecting a baby. And she was going to stay up there in the trailer and have her baby up there. And I was worried about her. So then I went up and bet she had gone home then. So I didn't stay very long. But my young son and my husband's brother, they stayed up there day and night waiting to see if they could get any sign of life and if they could get him out, you know. Yeah. So it was traumatic. Then I sat into nightmares. I'd always dream about Pete, and the pillow be soaked. I'd be crying, just sopping wet all my clothes for over a year. And I'd always dream, and he'd always come smiling, and he'd say, I didn't get killed in the mine. I was just away. And I always worked crossword puzzles and did a cryptogram and all that. And my dictionary was getting worn. And he says, I hear I brought you a new dictionary. He's always thinking about me, you know. And then one night I was lying on the divanet, and I was alone. My grandchildren weren't living with me then, you know. And I had the door closed and everything. It was warm in here. But all at once, just I raised up because something cold just went by me. Went, and I looked. And I reached out to feel it. And then it went back again. And I think that was Pete's spirit. Because I never had that happen to me. And I wasn't thinking about that happening. So it really happened. And cold, real cold, just like icebox. Air, you know, like a wind is the way it was. So I think it was Pete's spirit telling me I'm okay or something. But I never, why it happened to me, I don't know. And it wasn't imagination, it was true, real, very real. But I reached out and there was nothing there. So, it was, if Consol only knew what all the children and widows went through, they would never begrudge us our husband's pensions. That they worked and earned and never received, never received. No way. They didn't give us our husband's pensions.
And they never paid out a dime?
Well, after we sued them, then they, we battled them for years, and then they put money up. $10,000 and tried to divide we dear widows, and because, you know, some of them had received, gotten their husbands recovered by that time, because we fought in battle till we got 59 of them out. So we held out a few of us for quite a few years after they paid them others. And they had their husbands, and we didn't have our husbands or the money.
They wouldn't pay if they couldn't find the body?
They wouldn't pay you unless you sign your contract. Make us sign a contract, go through another living hell. We went through enough hell with them people. They got to answer. We don't have to answer. They're the one that have to answer. They're the one that have to answer for what they've done to all of us. And that's true. I wouldn't lie to you. It's true. And I will speak the truth till day I die. The torture they put us through.
Did your husband have black lung?
Yes, he did.
Did you ever get any black lung?
And so, I worked for the, I used to be secretary of the Black Lung in Marion County. I traveled everywhere for the Black Lung. You better believe I did. I helped fight for that, we widows, too. And on the front line for black lung. And then finally, you know, I never thought about me. I was thinking about helping everybody else. And I waited over 2 years before I ever signed up for it. And then in about 3 months, I received it. And it wasn't very much, you know, at that time, because as the inflation high cost of living, then they raised it, escalated it. But still, as much as you go out and pay for everything in your utilities, why, it helps a lot, but still you aren't getting all that much. And so then I received it, and I got $500 and something at one time. Then from then on, I got just every month. And then I was too young for Social Security. Then we only got $90 a month for the compensation. We had to battle and battle and battle and go and march and go in front of a casket with the black lung, with the man that had black lung, supposedly, you know, like a dead man, died from black lung. It was really not a person. And march and carry signs all around the rotunda there in Charleston. All that we did. And I don't regret doing it, not do it again. Yes, I would for the miners. Because they're late in getting what they're entitled to. And I hope they don't lose it either. But all of our widows didn't get it. And surely those men staying in that mine all that time, and with all that explosion, they definitely, if they didn't have it, they had it after that explosion, after that tragedy. And you know, those widows, they helped so much. The number 9 widows, they should have gotten the black lung. They don't all get it, just a few, a handful of them. Yet a lot of people get it that don't even deserve it, I tell you. So when they're getting their black lung, I hope they give a prayer and stop and think just how it came about. Came about through the Farmington number 9 tragedy that happened up at Llewellyn Portal in Mannington. November 20, 1968. There were a lot of tragedies before, but nobody spoke out. They thought that was the way of life. It wasn't. Something had to be done. So God inspired me. He's the one that helped me. He inspired me to form an organization, the Widows Mine Disaster Committee is what we're called. Farmington
Number 9. Are you still an organization?
Yes, we are. And Betty, let me tell you, we can get together just a flick of your wrist, or a snap of your finger, if we have to, for something that is right.
What about the current contract?
Well, it isn't any good because they got that clause in there for the non-union coal. And you can't, you have to be one side or the other. You have to be union or non-union. So you can't combine it. Can't combine it. Because that's just a leeway for the company to break the union. Just giving them a leeway. And I say, hang in there, miners. Hang in there, buddy. Hang in there. Because I'm with them all the way. And we got involved with the Miners for Democracy, Jock Yablonski. And he would have made a good leader because he was stern, and he understood the needs of the coal miner and their families and their widows, you know. And he would have been the second John L. Lewis. But then he met with tragedy, too. His wife and child, his daughter. So that was tragic. And I used to sit on a podium with him. He's so proud of we widows. Campaigned for him all over. Campaigned for Arnold Miller. He's been to my home here. I go places Arnold Miller wouldn't even go. Afraid. But I went, Kentucky and all them places. I said, if I have to die, I'll die for a cause I believe in that is humane. But I don't want to die till God, if it's my time, I'm ready.
Do you think you'll get back together with Pete when you go?
Oh, I know it. Because, see, about 4 years ago, I had pneumonia. Oh, I was at the point of death, just delirious. And do you know, that was another beautiful experience. Saw what heaven was like. And, you know, it would have been, it really would have been something. But I must, they say, I must have fought to live. or God didn't want me right then, you know. He had other things for me to do. But the more I walked, the more people I saw that were in heaven. And they're just, you know, so happy. Just like they'd say, come with me. We're happy to have you. And it was so peaceful and serene and beautiful. And I told the preacher, too, about it. And that was when I was really bad. Saw Pete, saw my mother, my father. So many people I've known all through my childhood. And it was beautiful, heaven was.
I feel like I've had a glimpse of it today.
So I think, you know, that my future home would be heaven. Because I think God wants you to stand up for what's right and be counted. And I'm not a crybaby either, but it touches me, you know. It touches me to think that society has changed so much. You want everything to be right for people. And we have so many that have so much, and people suffer. They suffer all over. The veterans. I love to go to the hospital and have parties for them and help them and serve them and things, because they did so much to preserve our country, to keep us free. And I love to work with the kids and the youth. And I love the old people. You know, so I'm just thankful. I think God's been good to me. Sometimes man hasn't, but... And if Consol, you know, weren't afraid to be human and have good communications, just think how beautiful the world would be. It's a lack of communications.
Why are they so afraid?
Afraid of their jobs. They have good jobs, company jobs. They're paid every month. They don't know what it is to suffer financially. Of course, I imagine they've suffered other ways, you know, with the illness and things, but everybody has, you know, burdens and barriers and things, but you have to overcome them. You have to overcome them. If you're strong enough and believe and think positive, you can overcome a lot of things. Because I overcame that tragedy in a way. However, I'll never forget it. No, I can never forget it. But I live a good, happy life. And of course, I think the reason I do is because I did have such a good husband that made a good home for me. We did everything together. Work in a garden together. We just, I don't know. If I'd make a meal, he'd say, that is a good meal. You know, it doesn't cost anything to compliment somebody. And you hate to even criticize the company, but gee, when they put you through what they put us through, why? I think people should be aware of it. What's going on, you know? And I hope the young miners today realize what the older miners fought and died for, to make a better way of life for them, which is what they did. And they didn't have it easy like now. But the automation and all, it's not as hard in a coal mine as it was. My husband dug coal and hand-loaded it, too. Broke his dear back doing that, I'd say. Not only him, but all the coal miners in the days, you know, maybe 3 decades ago. Yes. Go in at dark and get home at dark. And hardly ever draw a penny, because you never made nothing. They made the money. And then Continental Oil, I traveled out there and went to their stockholder meeting and spoke at the stockholder meeting. I said, why didn't you bring your meeting here, your annual stockholder meeting, in the coal fields? Well, you want to get away from the coal fields and want to put you where you are, right? That's what I told the president of the company, too. And, he was a good man. I mean, I wasn't even aware because I was so involved in what I was saying. And I wanted to get the message across to everyone there, all the stockholders. their wives in furs and everything. And his name was John, let's see, I can't think of his last name, but anyway, he came down off his podium. He was the president of Continental Oil. Put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, "We'll do what we can for you, Mrs. Kesnowski, for you widows, for the children." And then he passed away, so somebody else came, took over. Okay. His name is John. I can't think. I have it written down. Can't think of what his last name was. But I was really, I was just so alarmed for a big wheel like that to come down to a little widow, you know, and put their hand on. I must have touched him because his eyes were wet. He'd been crying. So I thought for sure I wasn't going to get to speak. It was almost lunchtime. And finally, I just disrupted him, told him, I said, I didn't travel all these miles just to be seen and not heard. I came here for an important mission and a message that I would bring to each and every one of you here. And then I ate lunch with his name is H-A-Z-L-E-T-T. He's dead now. His last name's Cochran. We always got Cochran. We get Mr. Cochran and Mr. Corcoran mixed up because one was President Consol and the other was PR man. So he said, "Dad, what would you like for dinner?" I said, "Oh, I'll just have a hamburger." See, I never wanted to use anybody. And my God, they ate steak. I ate a hamburger and I think some French fries and a cup of coffee. And traveled all that distance in a little old car.
Where was it?
Delaware. And they said, "Do I have any stock in the company?" I said, "Well, I'm here on somebody else's share." "I don't exactly have stock in a way, but," I said, "my property's on your property. And I want him out of there. He's down in the bowels of the earth, 800 feet, and along with the other coal miners. And I want you all to get those men out of that mine and find out what killed him so it won't happen again to other miners." I said, "That's why I'm here." And I said, "And I want something done for the widows and the children." Boy, it was hard. My voice was, you know, all the nerves in my voice box. It just sounded terrible. But they got the message.
Did you used to be such a forthright person before this tragedy?
No, I always participated in things to help. You know, like in church or in school. If anyone wanted somebody to help them, I'd always volunteer. You know, like to clean the blackboard and help pick up the paper off the floor, the teacher and everything.
But you weren't exactly an experienced public speaker.
No, and I'm still not experienced public speaker, but I've learned a lot. And it's not the big words that count. It's the simple words, getting them together right and getting the point across. Just get the message to them, that's all. Make them aware. And I think they should never forget. And I hope after I'm dead and gone, I'll be watching from heaven over all everybody. And I hope that somebody strong will carry on and fight for what's right in a constructive way, in a humane way. Stand up for their human rights, human dignity. Because then that way, people can't walk on you and use you and put you at the bottom all the time. You know, make you a second-class citizen. And I don't care who has what. If they have $1 million, they're not any better than I am. They're not. And what I know about, you know, all this experience, I suppose that they might learn a lot in books, but experience is the greatest teacher. You don't get your true education just going to college. You have to be there. You have to be involved. You have to be a part of something. you really get an education. And
like the people at Buffalo Creek did with Pittston, I suppose.
Yeah, that was sad.
I bet they're well educated now, too.
Sure. And see, we didn't know which way to turn, but God inspired us. And he helped us. See, we formed our organization for moral and spiritual support. And my, I never dreamed how it blossomed out. People from all parts of the world came for help. Over in England, the coal miners came, BBC television. And we did documentaries. I'm glad I was a part of it. So if they don't like me, I'm sorry. Because everyone didn't like the Lord either. No, they spit on him and everything. But I could never be like the Lord. But let me tell you, I can try to follow in his footsteps and do justice and stand up for your justice, right? But there's too much injustice around anymore. Bothers you. It bothers a person, you know. Now, I had a lot of good friends. Congressman Ken Heckler, he's an honest man. He taught me so much. He was a political science major. Let me tell you, he was an excellent teacher. I didn't go to school to him, but buddy, I observed and I listened. And he said I was a good student. And we had I had a lot of good friends, you know, that really cared. A lot of caring people.
Was Paul Kaufman a
yes, you know,
concerned man?